Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Lakers Collective. The draft has come and gone. We're now looking ahead to free agency, the trade market, everything else. We'll take a look at this Lakers roster, what they need, what they could potentially add coming up in the next few weeks. We'll get into all of it, plus talk about some specific targets. He's Jovan Buha. I'm Trevor Lane, and today we've got a special guest. It's Pete Zayas. You may know him as Laker Film Room. Pete, thanks for jumping on with us, man. This is fun.
Thank you for having me, guys. And did you know today is the 30th anniversary of Kobe being drafted, kicking off the greatest offseason in Lakers history? So no pressure, Rob, right?
good things happen every 30 years, they say, right? That's the expression. but happy to have you on, Pete.
Thrilled to be here. Thank you.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Happy to have you here. Guys, we've got a lot to talk about on today's show. A lot of things that are happening as we look around the league. I'm sure we're going to be getting a lot of questions and comments from the chat about different potential targets and such for the Lakers. But currently, when we're looking at this Lakers roster, pretty sparse. They've got a lot of work to do, a lot of things to fill out. You now are building a team around Austin Reeves, around Luka Doncic. Pete, you're the guest. Let's start with you. What do you think about this roster right now? Where are they in terms of their strengths? And what is it that we still need to see added to this team?
I mean, you got a great amount of on-ball shot creation between Austin and Luka, two guys who had great numbers together last year, that it was a shame we didn't get to see that over the course of the playoffs. But I think you have very clearly defined needs after that as well, like the push toward youth and athleticism and defense especially, I think is where they really need to go from here. And it all starts with that starting five spot, right? Luka wanted that A-list center before he left, went off to Europe. And we'll see who that is. I don't know about you guys. I've been, you know, pouring over the five list going, oh, where's it going to come from? And not exactly sure, but the time is now. This is the fourth transaction cycle since Luka's been a Laker. And, you know, they didn't want to take on extra money last year and extra years and things like that just to set up for this offseason. And so we're finally here. And that's where I really go first, Jovan, is that big man spot. I'm looking for a defensive presence more than anything because we're starting from that Luka and Austin starting point, but, you know, got the news about Jalen Duren today. Like, we need a talented player. I don't want it to be like two backups in a trench coat pretending like they're, you know, what they add up to one starter. You know what I'm saying? So like legit five.
Yeah.
I'm with you. Like, I guess it depends here. Are we counting the cap holds and the free agents, or are we just going straight like actual guys on the roster? Because if it's actual guys on the roster, there isn't a big man on the current version of the roster. You have Luka, Austin, Vando, Adu, Jake, Cameron Carr, and Bronny and Dalton Connect. So, and then Nick Smith, depending on what they do, I would assume that he would not be on next year's roster, but that gives you eight guys, all perimeter guys, and only right now two guys I feel good about being in a playoff rotation next season. And certainly some upside with Adu and Carr, and Bronny had started to come on later in the season. But yeah, it's barren there. And I think several of these guys, they would be smart to get off of in terms of potential trades and shedding some salary, gaining some more flexibility. But clearly they need some big wings. They need some athleticism in the front court and the back court. And I think they clearly need a center. Like, that's the position right now. Luka wants the A-list guy. I don't know if they're going to be able to pull off an A-list guy. Depends how you view an A-list center. I've been joking, like, they're not getting a Leo or a Denzel, but I think they can get someone who's on the movie poster. And so we'll see who that ends up being.
Yeah, to Pete's point, they've kind of kicked the can down the road for a number of years. I've been joking that the can at this point is beat to hell. It's rusted, it's dented, right?
Crushed.
It is absolutely crushed. But if you've been making promises to Luka, like, hey, summer of 2026, guess what? It's summer of 2026. The time is now to go try and get those things done. I do wonder, though, is there a, because I think we're probably in agreement that there is a real need at the center position as far as that being the main priority. And it doesn't mean you would say no to a Peyton Watson or someone like that on the wing, but the center position certainly is a priority. Pete, how far can we stretch the A-list portion of this? Like, is there a center that maybe in a vacuum is not A-list, but playing with Luka gets to whatever this, maybe a B-plus list or something like that level?
really, Kessler is the only guy I'd be thrilled with. My next two guys that I'd be happy with would be Jared Allen and Isaiah Hartenstein, all of whom feel unlikely. You know, maybe there's rumblings today about Kessler. We'll see. He had a mysterious IG post. I don't know if you guys saw that right before we got on, but with the lips zipped emoji working out today. So I would love to. Eric Pincus had a great trade idea that he posted today where we end up getting Kessler and Wiggins, but Kessler is the only guy that I'm like, hell yeah, because he checks that box, right? Of he's a very good rim protector, he's a very good rebounder. I have a candle lit for his pick and pop ability. He hit 6 threes in the 5 games he played last year and looked okay doing it. And he's a competent role man, but I think he processes the game well, underrated passer. I think he'd be very good in the short role alongside Luka, and being able to, you know, he draws so many of those doubles up top. Luka does that. You need a guy who can really pass out of that. You know, limited offensive game, not going to hit the little midi and floater that DA hits and all of that, but he checked enough boxes to where I'd be thrilled. And then Allen and Hartenstein are the other two. After that, like, my guy Darius was trying to talk me into Miles Turner today, that I think he's probably my floor. That's doesn't start with an A though, Trevor, right? Like, where's your like A list at? Do you have a guy that it sort of ends at?
My ends at on the A list side of things, Walker Kessler is my dream scenario. Of course, that's still my guy, especially if they can get just that rim protection that you would have from him. I think that really helps the perimeter defense. My floor for A list would be in there, and there's some rumblings that he is very available. It's Mitch Robinson, and I'm not in love with that. I'm not 100% sold that he's a starter. That's part of the problem here, but. Would I be okay if Mitch Robinson winds up being the guy? I love what he does on the offensive glass. Obviously, he is an absolute monster as a rebounder. I've got concerns about the injury situation with him, but that would probably be for me my okay. I could see where with Luka he could really step up. He's probably not a 30-minute a night guy. I'm not penciling him in for as big of a role as Walker Kessler, but if I were to add him in and make him part of a rotation, I think he could do fairly well. But that's my, they need to walk away from this offseason with at least a Mitch Robinson level player, worst case scenario type situation. Certainly not my dream scenario.
I'll just come out and say, I think that would be an incredible disappointment and incredibly underwhelming to walk out of this summer with Mitchell Robinson or Robert Williams. Like, those guys, they've averaged under 40 games per season over the last 3 seasons. Like, there's no assurance that they're going to make it to the finish line. And I think that, like, there is a version of that build. So last night on my show, I did a center tiered breakdown, and I had those guys in a tier with Daniel Gafford of like fringe starter types with some injury concerns. I called it high risk bets, where sure, there's a scenario in which any of those guys could play 70 games in a season. They have like an outlier health season. But, you know, at least with Gafford, he's been a starter consistently the last few years, and he has been a bit healthier, not as much the last couple of years. But like, if you look at the last like 5 years in general, he's been a bit healthier than those two guys. I think he can handle a higher workload. But if they leave with one of those three guys, I Gafford is the one where maybe you could talk me into him being starting level. But the other two guys to me are clearly high level backups. And if you do go that route, I think you need a center by committee, and you need to then invest. Like, that's where I would really target Eve Misi and see, even if it's a slight overpay, it's like, could you get Robinson and Williams, or, you know, Robinson or Williams, Misi and Jackson, and that's your three-headed center committee. And you have some, I would really like in that case, like Williams, Misi and Jackson. That would be one of the quickest and most athletic center trios in the league. But we're still like, you're still going into a fight with San Antonio and OKC and Denver and Houston and Minnesota with like fringe starters. And I just think we saw the limitation to that. Like, DA held his own in that Houston series, but we saw against OKC what that looked like. And so I think they need to walk away with at least the guy you feel comfortable with is going to be available for 60 plus games and is a clear starting level center. And that list is pretty small. The Venn diagram that like checks the boxes of what they need, plus is also available and is healthy and all the, like, it's a very short list. And that's where I think that the price for Kessler or Durin, or we haven't talked about Durin yet. Yeah. I mean, it's going to be high. And at this point, it's either like you go get the center or you don't. And if you don't, you're now dealing with some backups that I just think your ceiling is much lower.
So let me clarify. If I'm okay with Mitch Robinson, it would be in a scenario where I'm taking, let's say I use 10 to 15 million to get Mitch Robinson. I'm not saying go crazy and give him 25 million or something like that. And I'm then able to redirect some of those assets, some of that cap space towards, say, the wing position. Let's say it's a Mitch Robinson and it means that you're able to get Peyton Watson or some other player that can help you out at the wing position. Just adding Mitch Robinson, say run it back and then add Mitch Robinson, that I'm in agreement with you. And that I'm 100% not for. In a world where...
I think that's fair. If you get Watson, I'm more okay with the cheaper center approach. Yeah. I still think you need a third guy. I don't think you could be in a situation where Jackson's your only playable backup and like... You know, one of these guys goes down in February, yes. And now you're going into the playoffs with Jackson as your starter again. Like, I think that would be a disaster.
Pete, we're counting down the days here. We've got DeAndre Ayton has to make a decision on his player option by the 29th. How would you feel about him picking that up and then being not the starter, but part of the rotation as a center option? Or is it just time to move on? How do you see that with DA?
So I thought DA was better than his contract for us this year. Mm-hmm. And I wonder how we would handle being a backup. I also think that in this whole pursuit of a good enough type of center, if he were to opt in, he would represent a certain degree of, well, the same thing that he did for the Lakers last year of like, you're a stopgap five for whoever we get that center from. Say we were to get Kessler, we could go to Utah and be like, well, you've got somebody who at least does this job. You've got a level of competency at the five spot that we can at least replace him with a lesser player for sure, but a cheaper one in DA. And so if he picked up his option, I'd be more geared toward them moving him. And Jackson's cap hold is fairly low. And so, and he's Slovenian now, apparently. So I don't expect him to be going anywhere. That's part of the reason why, like, I wouldn't be okay with Mitchell Robinson, not because he's not a good player, but for two reasons. Because of the opportunity cost of all of that waiting, all of that, no, we're not going to try to make our team better now at the last trade deadline, at the last summer. We end up with Mitchell Robinson as our five. Secondly, Robinson plays 14 minutes a game. So what's happening the other 34 minutes? It can't be all Jackson, right? And again, I agree that it would have to be a three-headed monster type of thing, but that's part of the reason why, like, even DA picking up the option and being a part of that, it's like, you've got to have, to me, I'm a big believer in a closing five. Like, who are the five dudes you're going to go to war with? The Knicks had that brilliant closing five with Brunson, Cat, Bridges, OG, and Josh. And like, that's who's the worst player in that group? I think that's a really good, that's an amazing closing five, you know? And so whoever that is, if we go to that center by committee approach, like, who's that going to be? It's not going to be good enough, in my opinion.
I think you would need somebody in that group. If you were to go that center by committee approach, like Jovan suggested, you would need somebody who, and I threw out their DA. That's where I think I'd want at least one of those guys to be a potential upside play. And Eve Misi, we can question how much upside he's actually got, but you would want at least one of those players to say, man, if this guy, he's not there yet, but if this guy really hits, then okay, we could have the guy that is our center long-term, and then some of the other guys might, then Mitch Robinson or whoever, Rob Williams, whatever you want to throw in there, ends up being in a lower role. That's where Jovan, like the Kelo Ware pursuit made some sense. You know, if they'd been able to land him and have somebody like that, that is part of the rotation. I don't love the motor or anything. I'm not saying just Kelo Ware specifically, but just having somebody that does have a bit higher of a ceiling to where you could say, this is what's holding us over for now. We weren't able to get Jalen Duren. We weren't able to get Walker Kessler or anybody else who could be out there that really is that guy right now. But we've got a guy that we think in the next year, 2 years, could eventually step into that much bigger place.
Yeah, at least you see the path to upside there. I just don't really see it with Robert Williams and Mitchell Robinson. Like, I think you're kind of in a similar spot to where you were last year at the center spot. Mm-hmm. I think both of those guys do the job, like the specific job that the Lakers need from a Luka center and an Austin center. I think they do it better than DA. They are more traditional lob threats. They are better defensively than DA. They are better rebounders than DA. So, I mean, those are my three big boxes. But when I'm looking at like a macro perspective of what I want from the center position, I want that rim running lob threat pick and roll partner with Luka. I want an elite rebounder, ideally on both sides, but definitely on one side, but ideally both. And then I want someone who can protect the rim. And that's where like Walker Kessler to me is one of the few guys just in the league that checks all three of those boxes at a high level. Even a guy like Durin, who on paper, all-star, all-NBA guy, I don't think he's in the same class as Kessler defensively. So that's where I think there's some limitations there. But those guys are like the diet versions of that. They do check those boxes to a degree, but I don't know that they could play more than 20 minutes. And I just think when you're looking at the rest of the Western Conference, the rest of the top teams in the league, for the most part, they all have heavily invested in the center spot. We're even hearing today, Boston might be looking at potentially flipping Jaylen Brown for Jalen Duren, and that would be changing the identity of that group. So it's like every team that is in the Lakers' path to some degree has an all-star, all-NBA, or it's like a Gobert who's not there anymore, but is still like a defensive player of the year candidate. I don't see a team out there that's a contender with the exception of Boston, you know, which again, they might change things, that is like running out minimum centers or like mid-level centers. It's all like 30 plus million guys. So I think that's just the state of the NBA right now. And you could try to zag that, but I think you're threading a fine needle there.
Yeah, I agree 100%. It's something that, well, you used a great analogy last show we did. It's like the tight end position in fantasy football, where if you have that guy, it's a big advantage over your opponents that simply don't. It's become a league of haves and have-nots in that regard. And we've talked a lot about, you know, in the past, it was about who has the wings and who doesn't. And I think that element still exists in today's game, but the bigs are starting to become that as well, which is funny because, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, it was, you've got 10, 12 bigs that you can get that are just sitting out there in free agency. You can grab for a veteran minimum and no problem. This guy is serviceable and you can plug in, but it's now the situation is back in vogue. And unfortunately for the Lakers, this is probably the worst time in the last maybe decade to be looking for a big out there on the market. But nonetheless, that's why they pay Rob Pelinka of the big bucks. And that's what they've got to go accomplish. Pete, you mentioned Miles Turner. Did Darius sway you? Are you in? We have been fairly low on the idea of adding Miles Turner here. Where are you at? Because he's one of the more, I think, available bigs out there right now.
He's the floor for me. And Darius did move me a little bit because one of my takeaways from watching the playoffs is that having a five outlook is almost essential. Like, I started the playoffs thinking, yeah, it'd be nice for the Lakers to be able to go five out. And by the end of it, like, being able to pull Wemby away from the basket, being able to pull the OKC bigs away from the basket. But like, are you really going to start with such brilliant on-ball pick and roll play with Luka and Austin and not give them a legitimate role man, right? But he's also a two-way player. He's not the shot blocker that he used to be, but he was the starting five on a team that came very close to winning a championship just two seasons ago. But like, I understand why you guys are so low. What was your rationale, Trevor, for kind of where you're at on him?
Yeah, my concern is he a true lob threat? Would Luka make him a bigger lob threat than he's been in the past? That's certainly a question mark. And then it's the rebounding concerns. The Lakers were not a great rebounding team to begin with. And I think in general, I want to see guys who can really be a significant impact on that side of things, be able to really hit the glass. You're going to have to, I look at it this way. You have Luka and Austin right now, right? That is now the foundation upon which you're building your team, which means you have to be very, very specific in how you build out everything around those two guys. With a guy like Miles Turner, who is so deficient in one of the key big man areas, and that's rebounding, that means now you're also going to have to thread the needle of covering perhaps defensively, maybe not quite as much as some people make it out to be, but putting the athletes, the wings, the switchability in terms of the defensive side of things around Luka and Austin, the guys who can shoot, all the different boxes you have to check around Luka and Austin. But now you also have to find guys who can cover for Miles Turner's lack of rebounding. And there's only so many guys out there can do that. Like, if they could go get, you know, Aaron Gordon, and there's questions about Aaron Gordon and his age, certainly, but that type of player, okay, but now you've got to be able to do that in addition to finding the way. It makes it very difficult to put together a roster that can truly maximize strengths and mitigate weaknesses.
I also look at DeAndre Ayton, and there was this tug of war throughout the season with him embracing a certain role that just was not really tailored to his skill set. He did not want to play the Clint Capella role. And when he did play the Clint Capella role, he played it at a high level. Like, objectively, DeAndre, like, had some really high highs this past season. And when he committed himself to screening and rolling, and like he had several of those games where it was like 8 for 10, 9 for 11, 9 for 12. And it was like those games were often him just getting a ton of dunks, dump off passes, putbacks, and playing that dirty work center role of the rim runner, pick and roll partner, lob threat that he was not really intrinsic to who he is. And you had the whole Clint Capella situation in the middle of the season and some of the things he said in the media, some of the things JJ said. And I feel like we saw you can fit a guy who doesn't necessarily check the boxes you want offensively into that role. And Luka and Austin can maximize them to the best of their ability. But I just think it's a more natural partnership with a guy who actually has those things as his strength in his game. So to Trevor's like earlier point, like I rather just take the swing on Mitchell Robinson or Robert Williams than Miles Turner. I have like objectively Miles Turner is a better player than both those guys, but from a fit perspective of both of those guys are much better pick and roll partners, screeners, lob threats. Those guys are much better rebounders on both sides of the ball. Miles Turner rebounds like a big wing. And I just think, like, I think if he checked, if he was a better rebounder, I could maybe live with just being a stretch five. Or if he was like the lob threat but didn't rebound, I could live with like two of the three boxes that I think the Lakers need to check. One of the three, I think that's too flawed of a fit. So on top of that, we haven't even mentioned his contract, 3 years, $84 million left. So it's like if he was making 18, 20 million over the next, you know, per year over the next 3 years, I could maybe live with that, but that's such a big amount of money for a guy that I don't even think is worth that contract, but I also don't think will be the right fit. That it's like, I need, like I've been saying this on here, like I need a first round pick back and I want to dump Vando in the deal. If you can come to some sort of agreement there around those terms, okay, I'm a little bit more open to that, but barring like a solid asset coming back and getting off of Vando in that type of trade, I'm not interested.
That's a good argument.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's an interesting thing too. Would Milwaukee, that might be painful for Milwaukee a year after waving and stretching Damian Lillard, accepting $23 million in dead money on their books for 5 years to suddenly have to salary dump Miles Turner. But you know what? We're living in a different world.
You already traded Giannis though. Like you already ripped the band-aid off. You're in a new era.
Moved on. For sure. All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about Jalen Duren, who is kind of things getting a little, I think most of it's just restricted free agency shenanigans, but I want to talk about his potential fit. First, I need to give a quick shout out to our sponsor, and that is Prize Picks. Super easy to play. All you got to do is use the code HMA. The link is in the description down below. Play $5, get $50 instantly over on Prize Picks. Pick more or less on some of your favorite players. Kylian Mbappe, yeah, he's already got two shots on target. World Cup rolling. I'm going to go with him. I'm going to say he gets more than 3.5. So that means 4 shots on target. I think he gets there. And then I'm not going to pick against Leo Messi. Is the guy going to score a goal? Yeah, he's Leo Messi. He's going to score a goal. So I'm rolling with that. You guys want to get in on it. Again, the code is HMA. Great deal going on right now. Play $5, get $50 instantly over on Prize Picks. All right. So Jalen Duren, reportedly, according to Sam Amick, looking for sign and trade opportunities. Not thrilled with the offer that the Detroit Pistons have given him, but restricted free agency is a major pain, and the Pistons have already come out and said, well, too bad that you don't like it. We're not going to trade you. Maybe that could be tested, but Jovan, let's start with you on this. What do you think about the potential fit for Jalen Duren as a Los Angeles Lakers sign and trade target?
I'm open to it. I would say I'm probably a little lower on Duren than consensus because I think, for example, like I we have to compare him to Walker Kessler because there is some sort, like they're both RFAs. They're the two top centers on the market. And I think it's just natural to compare them. Like, again, in a vacuum, Jalen Duren, all-star, third team All-NBA, will potentially get a higher contract than Walker Kessler. I would assume that theoretically, but who knows with how the Lakers might drive up the Kessler price or the Duren price. You know, we'll see. I just think he doesn't like I don't think he's at the level defensively that you want from your anchor, especially your anchor, to Pete's point earlier about protecting Luka and Austin. Like, I think it's one thing when you're in a Detroit system and you have Ausar Thompson on the wing and you have, I mean, basically everyone they're starting is 6'7 to 6'9 and they have all these athletes and size, and he can play a certain role defensively. what it's more so, you got a bunch of fires to put out and he's got to be processing and he's got to be rotating and reading things and protecting the rim at a certain level. I don't think that's necessarily a high level strength of his. So I think based on him likely costing more than Kessler, depending on the Lakers' involvement in all this, and him not being as good of a fit for what the Lakers specifically need, that's where I'm a little lower on it. But again, if we look at opportunity cost and we look at the options, like if it comes down to Durin versus Robinson or Williams, I still would lean on the Durin side just because this dude's 22 and he did just make third team All-NBA. He was just an all-star and he had a really rough postseason. Some people are comparing him to DA with the processing game moving too fast for him. That is concerning, but he's young enough to me where at 22, I do expect Jalen Durin to be a different playoff performer at 25, 26. And obviously for the Lakers, like you need some immediacy here, but I think I'm sure he's going to learn from like this dude is, I think he's a competitor. I think he's a winner. He has gotten better year over year dramatically. He did improve significantly this season. So I'm going to bet on Jalen Durin long-term. I think my concern here would be both the price of like, does that get 40 plus million? Is it a max? Like it might cost the max to actually pry him from Detroit. Even then they might just match that. But on top of that, I think there's some, like to me, he's more like a B plus defender and I want an A or an A plus defender. And so maybe he could be an A minus in a certain system, certain context, but I want the A or A plus.
Yeah. Yeah. That's very similar to where I'm at. I've been watching a good amount of tape on him this week and just like, he's out of position a decent amount and he's a much better leaper when he's got a running start. This is true of a lot of players, but that ability to sort of make that hop and then get vertical and get both hands up and contest high like that, like he just gets there a little bit late too often for my taste, but he's a really good player. And I sort of want to make a devil's advocate argument of if you were to link him up with Austin and Luka, I think you sort of bring out the best in all three. I think it's, kind of a peanut butter and jelly fit in a lot of ways that he's a very good offensive player that you can give him the ball a little bit and he's a better dribbler than you might expect. Trevor, your rebounding concerns about Miles Turner, he actually checks that box quite well. Big time. Right. So where do you stand on him, Trevor? Because I'm like, I agree that you'd have to get to a certain dollar amount to where it's like, do I want Durin at 40 plus million? Probably not. But that's probably what you need to do to get him from Detroit.
My concern is the rim protection. That's the big thing with me. It's the rim protection piece, because I think that not only do with the Lakers, they're 29th in the NBA in rim protection last season. That's obviously got to improve. But particularly when we're talking about, once again, mitigating weaknesses of Austin Reaves and Luka Doncic, you need to have that rim protection piece behind them. I mean, how many years did we hear, guys like who are already good perimeter defenders, guys like KCP, Avery Bradley, so on, Danny Green, talk about how nice it was having the kind of rim protection they did behind them because it allowed them to do other things defensively on the perimeter, take chances. And I think we're seeing stylistically in the NBA, we saw, the Thunder obviously be kind of at the forefront of this, but this idea that we're going to play this very aggressive brand of perimeter defense. And we've seen the Phoenix Suns, the Detroit Pistons have adopted that style as well. As that continues to spread and more teams are gambling for steals, and you don't want to see the Lakers fall behind and how aggressive they can be on the perimeter. But in order to do that, you've got to have a pretty solid defense behind you as well. And with Detroit, you had Oscar Thompson. Durin is not necessarily that top tier rim protector. But one thing that I've been thinking, trying to question myself on this is, are we overthinking this? Yeah. Because if I had to rank them, I would right now slot Walker Kessler ahead of Jalen Durin. If I got to pick, but if both told me both guys are the same price, I would take Walker Kessler because of that rim protection ability. But then part of me thinks, is that crazy? Because Jalen Durin was third team all NBA last season, was an all-star. Walker Kessler played five games and has not made any high praise like that in terms of a postseason award. Mm-hmm. Are we overthinking it? Is Jalen Durin a better player than Walker Kessler, especially when we add in the injury concern?
I think you can make the argument. Would you rather have Robinson at 15 or Kessler or Durin at 40?
Oh, that's tough.
Well, so there's an opportunity cost element here of if you told me it's Watson and Robinson combined for 43 to 45, if you said Robinson 15, we'll say Watson 28 to 30, I might lean that direction. Because if it's Durin for 40, then you're pretty limited. unless you, you know, it depends. DA could opt out. That gets you some more flexibility. Maybe you could dump Vando. It's going to take a first, I think, to get off that contract. But you're still pretty limited in terms of your wing options. I mean, same can be said with Kessler. Again, yeah, I think his number will be a little bit lower, but that's a tough one. I mean, that's a question the Lakers have to figure. I mean, I think that the clear answer to me, I guess, if you don't get the high level wing, I would prefer, I think there's like a talent element here, especially if this, like, we haven't really touched on this, but like getting one of these RFAs most likely costs you LeBron. There is a way to fit him in. If you could find a way to carve out 20, 25 million in cap space and he's willing to take that, you could still keep LeBron and add one of these high level guys. But realistically, it's probably going to cost you LeBron if he wants a certain number. And then at that point, like you do need to replace some wing and forward talent in general. And so if you're telling me it's like just that, you know, bargain center or whatever, but you're not really getting another high level perimeter guy, or it's just going all in on like a much higher level center, I would prefer the talent play, even if it costs obviously a lot more.
Yeah, that's a great point. And the LeBron factor is certainly a big one here. I don't know if you guys saw the report that just came out. It's been getting aggregated right now for Brian Windhorst that like LeBron wasn't even telling his former Cavs teammates what he's doing, or he swore them to secrecy and they're all saying that he didn't tell him. But I really don't know what things are going to look like with him. The one thing that we know with certainty is they're building around Luka and Austin. I don't know which way this whole LeBron situation goes. I feel like the closer we get, I felt pretty good. Yeah, LeBron's probably coming back a few weeks ago, and maybe that's ultimately where we end up. But the closer we actually get to free agency, I feel like I'm getting less and less certainty of that being the way this ultimately plays out. I guess that is maybe something we should discuss. Pete, how much of this Lakers offseason plan is going to be determined by what the ultimate decision of LeBron James is? Or is it something where they should just make their plan, and if LeBron fits into that, so be it, and if not, then he doesn't?
I think it's the plan's been much more of that than the other way around. Just the degree to which this whole conversation about the offseason has been like, oh, by the way, yeah, LeBron James, it's just crazy. It's such a different dynamic than any other time he's been a free agent. That The Shams report yesterday, for example, about how, you know, they had contact early in their window, but they haven't been in touch. Like, he's gotten the no-brainer max contract, the, okay, who do you want on your team? We're going to keep you in the loop. That Jovan knows this, that I've been much more, I've been saying pretty consistently that I think it's a much lower percentage chance that LeBron is back this year, in part because I think that's part of what they've circled the summer of 26 to do, is to move on from LeBron. It's the first time he hasn't been on an extension. Like, Bron doesn't usually hit unrestricted free agency, at least not with the Lakers, right? He'd like to hold Cleveland and Miami over the fire with player options and things like that, but he's usually extended with the Lakers. And I think that just for a very long time now, that's part of what the whole, like, we're going to tell Luka that, oh, it's the summer of 26. It's like, well, we've got all this money because LeBron won't be there to be able to spend to build a team that's really catered to be around you. I think the presumption that you're going to get better and become a championship team while losing LeBron, you better have a hell of an offseason if that's the plan. But yeah, Trevor, I think it's there's a decent likelihood he's not back.
Yeah, it definitely struck me when that report came out, because it immediately made me think of that there hasn't been a lot of communication between LeBron and the Lakers. It immediately made me think of, I don't remember what year it was, but Anthony Davis kind of half joking that Rob Pelinka was blowing up his phone nonstop all summer about free agents and trades and signings. I'm like, under communicate is not what we tend to hear from the Lakers with their stars. It's usually the opposite. It's over communicate. They brought Austin Reeves embroidered pillows for Kyle or whatever the hell that was. Like the Lakers, they are not ones to go radio silent or anything like that. Like, the fact that there hasn't, or the report that there hasn't been much communication, I thought was maybe the greatest indication of where things were at between LeBron and the Lakers and his status with the team. It's an awkward situation for him. He is no longer the most important player on the team, and that has not been a true statement probably his entire life up until this point. I mean, Jovan, like, this is certainly uncharted territory for LeBron James.
Just to circle back to something, I really want to know what these pillows look like. Like, I want to know what's the design aesthetic of the pillow. Like, how did they pick the pillows? What's the font Was it purple and gold, or was it like, does Austin have a favorite color that they made it that? Like, I'm just very curious with how they came up with that and designed that. So I would love to see that. But yeah, I mean, I think if we just like, look, there's a lot of noise out there, right? And it's every day there's a new LeBron rumor or some speculative thing that he's staying, he's leaving, he's going here, whatever. I think we just operate with like how, what's happened publicly, or what we know to have happened, at least up to this point. Like, the Lakers have not been moving like a team that's prioritizing keeping LeBron. I think, like, I mean, you could correct me if I'm wrong on that, but they have not seemed to, like, if that was this big priority for them, I don't think they're handling this whole situation in a way that would lend itself to that. So it does kind of feel like they're exploring what can we get via restricted free agency or sign-in trades, what's out there in unrestricted free agency, what's out there in the trade market in terms of teams having to get off money. And we're going to circle the block on all those things. And then if we don't find something we like, we're going to come back to you, LeBron, and then we can make you more, you know, a bigger offer than anywhere else. Like, I don't know how he's going to feel about that. I don't, you know, like this is, to your guys' point, like, this has been the guy since he was like 13 years old, 12 years old. He has always been the guy. He was the chosen one, and not like being prioritized to this degree. I think it's maybe money talks and, you know, convenience talks, and he wants to stay in LA. He wants to keep being a Laker. He gets the most money, and ultimately they patch it out, and that is how this plays out. But like, there is a human element here. We saw it with the Austin negotiations. We're now seeing it with the Jalen Duren negotiations. And if the Lakers really only gave him that initial call and have not really followed up since then and are being attached to all these other options left and right, like, I don't want to say the writing's on the wall, because I think that's too aggressive, but they're not moving like a team that's trying to keep him, in my opinion, at least based on everything we've seen up to this point.
LeBron's looking around right now going, where's my embroidered pillow? Come on. I'm a free agent too.
Was that to distract Austin from offering him $30 million in the first place? It'd be like, here's some country music and some...
It's a pillow. Sign here. I'll pay attention to those numbers. Do you think they started too low in that negotiation? If that is accurate, there was $30
million? To me, the game is the game. Like, I don't... On the other end of it, I don't begrudge Austin for saying, oh, I'm not going to take every single dollar. And then, hell yeah, taking every single dollar that he can when he, like, look, you do the best that you can, especially in this apron era where you've got just a finite amount of money to build with. And it's very punitive if you go beyond that. Like, he re-signed, so I think all's well that ends well. But yeah, I do think that there is a little bit of smoke and mirrors component of, like, look at how much we love you at this other stuff. 51 or 5 years, 150, you know, like, yeah. So do you think he was insulted by that?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I think that's an offensive opening offer, just because if, like, already in, you know, there's different versions of timelines in terms of what's been reported, what I've heard. So I don't know the exact timeline here, but mm-hmm. there had already been some smoke that Brooklyn and Detroit and Atlanta were several teams that were going to be pursuing him at the max or near max. So unless the Lakers just were trying to call the bluff there and being like, we feel like this is being leaked to, you know, drum up your market. I think if these other teams are offering him 40 to 44 AAV and you're coming in at 30, obviously you're going to go above that. And they ended up going, you know, much higher than that. But I think 35, somewhere in the mid 30s, would have probably been a more appropriate starting point. I mean, I'm sure you guys have had negotiations, and like, that's where that first offer is always offensive mm-hmm. to some degree. So like, I guess that's where you could defend the Lakers and say, hey, like, it's the initial offer. They ended up paying him much more than that. But I do wonder if they had come out with like 35 or 37 or 38 or somewhere in that range, is he less offended? Is he less looking elsewhere to potentially just straight up leave? And then you have that threat, and then you end up having to pay him the max. Like, I do wonder, there's an alternate scenario where, if, as counterintuitive as it might sound, if they actually started the negotiation higher, they could have got him at a lower price versus $30 million. I think he's like, I'm leaving. That's mm-hmm. like, that's offensive. I'm out of here. I'm going to Detroit. I'm going to Brooklyn, wherever. So that I do think in some ways might have played a role in him actually getting the max, whereas if it was a little bit higher, I think they potentially could have gotten a discount on him.
That's what I've been wondering too. Was there a scenario where they could have started a little bit higher and then there isn't the conversation with Detroit, and then Detroit's not like, oh yeah, we'll give you that full max, and you just lock that up before you even get to that point. So, but who knows? Maybe that still would have occurred. Obviously, that's an alternate timeline that we don't live in, and the deal is what the deal is that they came to terms on. We do need to talk about what would constitute a successful offseason for the Lakers, what that's ultimately going to look like. We'll, of course, get into the chat, too, in just a moment. First, I want to give a shout-out to our sponsor, and that is Factor. And we'll get a little Jason Tipp cameo here. Let's go.
All right, quick break. And this one's actually something I've been using personally. Cold days, big games, busy schedule, no time to cook. That's why I've been rocking with Factor. I've been ordering their Protein Plus meals, especially the grilled chicken with roasted veggies. Perfect for me because I'm trying to keep my energy high for shows without feeling heavy after eating. What I like about Factor, quality ingredients, lean proteins, real veggies, whole food fats, no refined sugars, no artificial sweeteners, no refined seed oils, and it fits the schedule. They've got 100 rotating meals weekly, keto, calorie smart, Mediterranean, GLP-1 support, even a new Muscle Pro collection for strength and recovery. And the convenience is crazy. Always fresh, never frozen, ready in about 2 minutes, no prep, no stress. I use this, and you guys should too, especially if you're balancing work, school, gym, and Lakers games every night. Head to factormeals.com/LakersPod50off and use code LakersPod50off to get your 50% off your first box plus free breakfast for a year. That's 50% off and a free breakfast item in every box for a year while your subscription is still active.
All right. Good to see Jason there.
Love you, Jason.
Yeah, he's doing well. All right, we got to talk about this. What would be a successful offseason for the Lakers? Then we'll get into our chat questions and comments and all that. Real quick, though, we've got 2,300 people in here right now. Double check everybody for me real quick. If you're not subscribed yet, hit the subscribe button right here on the Lakers Collective. Make sure that you go follow us over on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts as well. We'd appreciate that. Keep the show growing and going. But guys, let's talk about a successful offseason. Pete, what are you looking at as, like, what would that bar be for us to walk out and say, yeah, that was a successful summer for the Lakers?
I want to see a championship on the horizon, right? I want to be like one move, and I'm not talking a big time for another star type of move, but like one little trade deadline addition, and let's rock and roll and be ready to compete with OKC and San Antonio. Like, again, there's that opportunity cost of, I don't want to say punting, because they got Kennard, who's a nice pickup that they might keep, right? But the whole idea of, we're going to limit ourselves to not taking on multi-year deals for the purpose of setting things up to build you, Luka Doncic, the team of your dreams. And then you come back and we're still getting our butts kicked by 30 from OKC. Like, hell no, man. Like, this has to be a team that's right there in the mix. And a lot of times it takes a couple of years to win a title, but Jovan, they got to be right there on the precipice of it for me, for this to be a successful offseason. I have very high expectations.
I agree with you. I'm just also thinking, like, I've yet to really see roster builds that I would say are one piece away from an OKC or a San Antonio. And that's where the Lakers just have a massive decision to make here in terms of whether they operate above or under the cap. If you operate under the cap, that's obviously more flexibility. That's how you overhaul the roster. You bring in some bigger pieces, but the money goes quickly. Like, there, I mean, if we're talking potentially 35, 40 million for Kessler or Durin, or even 30 million for Watson, you're going to have like 20 to 25, depending on the final numbers to play with. And that's retaining your own free agents that you're interested in potentially retaining. Like, you still have the 9.4 room exception, or to just add other guys. So, like, I think the cap space scenario, I think, is the flashier one. It's the sexier one. But you also are potentially adding like one to two mid to big pieces, and then not having much depth and like having the bench that the Lakers currently have. So that's something that you have to weigh. If you go over the cap, you're obviously retaining that core and bringing back a lot of the guys. You do have some flexibility with trades as long as you're under the first apron. And then you also have the non-taxpayer MLE, though I think part of that will have to go to Marcus Smart if you want to retain him. So that version is less appealing, but you are retaining some level of depth, and you can maybe via trade and the non-taxpayer MLE add another 2 to 3 pieces to the roster that maybe aren't the highest level guys, but then obviously the roster's probably not good enough. So as I'm like looking at both pathways, I'm like, I guess the cap space pathway is still the best one, although some people disagree with that. I don't see where, like, it feels like they need some version of the above the cap, like retaining most of the key rotation and adding like a Kessler and a Watson. And that to me is where it's just not possible. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, you might add the Kessler or the Watson and then like another mid-level type guy, but then you're losing LeBron, you're potentially losing Rui, you're maybe losing Luke on top of that. And then you're filling out the roster with minimums and keeping Marcus on like the room exception. Like, how much better is that team? I don't even know. Right. So I don't know. They're in a tough spot. There's a lot of pressure, but I would agree. Like my goal that I think is maybe more realistic is like walking away from this transaction cycle with a long-term starter, either at the five or on the wing that is locked in with Luka and Austin. Like I think that's the bare minimum. Ideally you do more than that, but like that's where when we talk about Mitchell Robinson, Kelly Oubre, Quentin Grimes, something like that, like that's not moving the needle, and none of those guys are long-term pieces. You know, Grimes maybe, but I think more in a bench role.
Yeah, I agree. I think the one, at least one long-term starter with Luka, with Austin, a guy who really fits, that is very clearly in the vision of what this team is going to be, that's something that you're absolutely going to need. I think a lot of people out there will trash any kind of move that the Lakers could make, though, and say, well, that doesn't get us to be better than OKC. That doesn't put us above San Antonio. Well, there aren't moves, unless we're talking about a fantasy land where they can keep everybody plus just add to it. It reminds me a little bit of the Marcus Smart edition of this past summer, where the Marcus Smart edition, is that a positive? Yes, it was two steps forward, but you also took a step back there because you added Jordan Goodwin. You lost Jordan. Mm-hmm. A full two steps forward. No, it's two steps forward, but you also took a little step back. Mm-hmm. And so the net result isn't as strong. Well, is there a world where you're going to turn Jared Vanderbilt and Dalton Knecht into significant stuff for this roster? Probably not. So retaining everybody, not taking that little step back and just adding to this roster, is going to be very difficult to do. It's certainly a difficult needle to thread, but again, they've been putting everything on this summer. We said it at the trade deadline when they added Luke Kennard. Okay, that puts all the pressure now on the summer. You've got to find some significant moves. And I'll tell you, I think the big thing, it's not so much the Lakers have to have a roster that's better than OKC, that's better than San Antonio. I think we've seen over the years now, and the Knicks just proved it, that you want to give yourself a chance. Give yourself a chance in today's NBA, have a shot at it, and you get the right guys to catch a little bit of magic in the postseason. Anything can happen. But what I want to see is not just the roster that we're talking about that we want. What does Luka think? What does Luka feel like coming out of this summer? Does he feel like we're on the right path or not? Because it's not that far away, free agency for Luka Doncic. That is perhaps the biggest thing for this summer. It's, does Luka at least feel like, yes, I'm in the right place. These guys are on the right track. They are going, we may not be there today, but we are going to get there. Or does he come out of this summer saying, well, we didn't do it. We didn't get it. We didn't get it done. And I guess it's another year where I'm spinning my wheels. That, I think, for the Lakers as a franchise, that may be the biggest indicator of whether or not it was a successful offseason.
I got my torches and pitchforks ready. Like, again, yeah. Like all, a lot of the stuff that you say, Jovan, for example, of like the constraints that they're operating under, 100% correct about all that. But they could have known all of that a year in advance. There was none of it.
I'm not absolving them. I want to be very clear here. I'm not absolving them. They made their own bed, and now they have some constraints that, like, I don't know how they're going to navigate these and come out. Like, I think they are kind of in this situation where it's either picking between depth or a more top heavy roster again. And maybe if you have a better top heavy roster, or the pieces fit better, that's a better outcome. And you could Frankenstein the depth in the bench, but they've also not been good at that the last few years. I think they've had pretty weak benches and some of the worst depth in the NBA, post title run. So it's a tall task there of either like run it back and add Mitchell Robinson and call it a day, which I think would be a disaster, or make some big moves. But like, you're gonna run Walker Kessler and Kelly Oubre, there's your cap space. That's all your cap space between those two guys, mm-hmm. right? Like, so, and then you lost LeBron, you lost Rui, you lost Luke Kennard, you're gonna lose DA. Like, you're just losing a lot of pieces from last year that some of those guys aren't the best fits and or maybe weren't in the best slotting, but like, I don't know. I just think they're, yeah, it's what Rob's got to figure out.
Yep.
All right, let's go to some of our chat questions and comments. They're going to pinball us through a bunch of different topics here. Jermaine asked before the show started, why haven't the Lakers held their post-draft press conference yet? Is it because of pending trades or roster moves still being finalized? Jovan, you were there. What was the frustration like in the room when it was determined that Rob was actually not going to be speaking after the draft because the trade with the Knicks was not had not already gone through?
There was some frustration because it was pretty late. We were there till like almost 9:30, and the draft had been over for about an hour, and it sounded like he was going to talk. And then because, I mean, it was a multi-team trade, and like this is just how it works. You know, I've been doing this long enough where if a trade has not gone through, they cannot talk about it. So that's just how it goes. So it was frustrating, but he is going to be talking today at 2:30 and is going to be introducing Cameron Carr. And I'm sure there'll be some off-season questions as well with free agency looming. So I will be there in about an hour and a half. So looking forward to that.
All right. This question from Caesar said, thoughts on the new Pinkus trade idea, LeBron 2 first. Well, here, actually, I've got it right here. We can share it. There it is. So LeBron, Bronny, because of course they got to go together to the Heat. Basically LeBron out, couple of firsts out. The Lakers get Andrew Wiggins, Walker Kessler from the Jazz, and they wind up with a trade exception. The Jazz getting DA, who's picked up his player option in this scenario, Vando, Laravia, Connect, couple of firsts. Pete, if this is on the table for the Lakers, are you doing this?
I'm doing backflips if we do that.
Yes.
Exactly the type of yeah. offseason that I've got the expectations for. You can't punt three off seasons and three transaction cycles and then be like, just add a little bit to it. This is what I'm looking for.
Yeah, I'd be thrilled. Jovan, I'm assuming you also would be executing the backflip.
Yeah, I can't backflip, but this would be an ideal, I think, scenario, especially in the, like, you are losing LeBron here, which we do have to acknowledge. Yes. And you would potentially, depending on where the numbers come in, have the flexibility to still keep Rui. You still have the room exception to re-sign Marcus. But if you are losing LeBron, which again, we'll see which way this ends up going, I think this is close to the best case scenario in like a realistic sense.
All right, let's go to, and I do agree, that's probably the best case scenario. Euro Chuck Norris said, today Mark Stein was asked about value for Gafford and PJ and said he does not believe they're worth each a first round pick. LA should jump on this info. Well, that's, first of all, he said it in the question. He was asked, he does not believe, that's what he's thinking, right? That's Mark Stein's opinion. Does his opinion reflect that of the Mavericks? We don't know, but Stein is very, very plugged in with the Mavs. If it was a first and you would grab, but let's call it a first and a swap for both those players, are you guys interested in something like that? PJ Washington, Daniel Gafford.
I do like them. I do have questions if the Mavs would do that. I know we did a couple of draft night trades, but I think it's different just trading picks that aren't attached to actual human beings yet versus the, actually, let's help the Lakers even more to try to win a championship. So I'm a little skeptical about the Lakers and Mavs doing a move like that. I really like PJ. I guess Bron would be out in this scenario. I wonder what we do at the wing. I guess Marcus would end up being, because PJ's a little bit on the bigger side, not really a point of attack type of guy. Like, I like the talent add. I'd probably try to go. It's tough because we don't have seconds, right? Like, he's saying they're not.
I
mean, really,
I think you'd go PJ Marcus as the starters, no?
Yes, no. But what I'm saying is that like PJ is not another point of attack defender like Marcus, leaving Marcus as the only guy on the team that does that. Yeah, yeah. And I don't like, that's part of what I like about the Wiggins Kessler thing is that you got also a taller, lankier on ball defender to pair with Marcus, who's the fire hydrant on wheels type of defender. And now you're cooking, you know, whereas if you had PJ, that's not really what he does for a living. Like, it's a good talent add for sure. I wish we had like 3 seconds to be able to trade for one of those guys rather than both.
Be nice.
Yeah.
I have a feeling there would be Mavs fans who already have their eyes on 2028. Can we get Luka back? That type of thing. Would not be thrilled about their club giving the Lakers the pieces to make Luka happy.
I also think that might be the standard price for the Mavericks. I think we can debate the legitimacy of the Lakers tax. I think there's a real Lakers tax in this scenario, and like it's going to be at least a first round pick for each of those guys, in my opinion.
All right, so one threw in a comment that actually calls back to the front office show, which we were live with that a couple hours ago, and he said, "So my uncle made me a Nets fan. We from New Jersey. He used to take care of me until my dad came around, and that's when he made me a Lakers fan. He said, 'I'm sorry, tell Keith Smith, my front office show co-host, chill. Me and Pops love y'all's show. Much love to y'all.'" So what Juan sent in was a comment talking about being a Nets fan and a Lakers fan, and we had a short discussion about whether or not you're allowed to be a fan of two teams at the same time. So since Juan sent this in, I'll get your takes. Is it permissible to be a fan of two teams simultaneously?
Absolutely. I am a Laker fan, and I'm a fan of whoever is playing Boston. Trevor, one of my favorite tweets that you always send out is who we're rooting for tonight, and it always includes Boston, even if it has no relevance on the standings or anything like that. Like, we're always rooting against Boston, so absolutely.
I think it's okay. I don't like policing people's fandom. I think like life is short. Be a fan of whatever you want to be a fan of. We've even had it like the last generation of kids have sort of switched more from being fans of teams to fans of players. And you got the stan culture, and it's more so like the FCs on social media and stuff. So I'm pro, like, you know, be a fan of whatever you want. Obviously, you know, ideally you're not just rooting for whoever's like the best team in the league or something like that. But even if that's your form of fandom, like I think root for what you root for, like be happy.
Yeah.
Enjoy basketball. I'm always going to be for people enjoying basketball. Alex Walton said the Lakers front office needs to dispel the narrative that they'd kill for a sign and trade with LeBron for Jared Allen, because Bron can just go to Cleveland and say, now you get neither. I mean, he'd be signing for, probably talking about a veteran minimum here. The Cavs have a significant cap issue that they're trying to work through and sort out. Maybe they can get to like a taxpayer mid-level. They'll have to do some gymnastics and things to get there. But that was thrown out there by Winters. If LeBron wants to go to Cleveland, wouldn't that be the ideal scenario from a Lakers perspective? Is LeBron decides he's going to go somewhere else. I'm talking about in a world where LeBron does not want to come back. If LeBron exiting brings in whoever their starting big would be, whether that's Jared Allen or somebody else, that's kind of the dream situation for the Lakers if we're living in a world where LeBron's not coming back.
It is. They probably need to talk to him at some point, if Deshaun's reporting is correct, because they would need his cooperation. Like, that's the premise of the Pincus trade that he put forth, is like, Bron going to Miami, is you're going to need that cooperation and all of that. So, I would love to have Allen. I don't know why Cleveland trades their lob threat five when they're starting out with Donovan Mitchell and James Harden in the backcourt. Seems to me that's what you need around those guys. I do think that it would require some of Bron's cooperation there.
I think the other thing would be, wouldn't LeBron just say, no, I want to play with Jared Allen?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that would dramatically change how that team functions. I also think, I mean, again, this is kind of to the earlier point of, that's, you know, Windhorst reporting that or speculating on that. I'm not quite sure. I saw the clip, but I don't know the context like leading into it. So I want to give him, grace with that. But like, I mean, this is again kind of speaking to the Lakers not necessarily prioritizing LeBron or moving in a manner that suggests that they need to keep him necessarily. Like, it feels like they want to keep him or would like to keep him. They don't like need to keep him. And that to me is a departure from how they've operated with him and how basically every other team has operated with him.
All right. Ivan said, I'm really not liking how the offseason has started. That said, if you had to bet, it's October and opening night, trade season over, and whatever we added, who is the Lakers starting five? Oof.
I like this question because I actually asked this on draft night to everybody in the media room, and it was getting different answers. They were largely depressing. Ranging from like
what names Eve were
coming up? To Daniel Gafford to Mitchell Robinson. There was not a lot of optimism. That's really tough. I mean, I'm going to, this is a cop out. Like I I kind of want to pick someone in my tier three of my center rankings, which is the Gafford, Williams, Robinson mm-hmm. tier. I think that's like the most realistic, but obviously I think Kessler's gettable. I just think the price is going to be astronomical. I think there's going to be some sticker shock there of like, it's going to be high 30s, close to 40.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm so going to say
it just depends on how they feel about that. Yeah. Sorry.
I'm going to be an optimist here and say that it's Austin, Luca, Marcus, Rui, and Kessler.
Okay.
I'd be a little bit surprised if we lost both LeBron and Rui. But again, if they make some... one thing that I think is worth keeping in mind is I do think that they have reserved this cap space more for trades than free agency.
Yeah.
And I think that's a little bit understood in that, like, you know, you look at the free agent list and it's like, all our guys are the best guys on the free agent list in the first place. So like, what the heck are the Lakers doing? I think, again, it's more toward the trade component. But yeah, they will need a four. So that's going to be my very, like, no confidence at all type of guess. How about you, Trevor?
Yeah, they took the top non-LeBron free agent off the market when they signed Austin Reeves, right? The Lakers' own guys are their top free agents. But I do think that it's a fair point about they're probably going to use their cap space to facilitate trades. We've been hearing that they've been looking to maybe solve some teams' cap space problems and get talented players in return. I will stay optimistic in the Kessler situation. My fear is this, and I saw this idea floated out earlier today, just floating around on social media, but the idea that maybe the Knicks are not so opposed to going into the second apron, as James Dolan said, but maybe the Knicks are opposed to the amount of money that Mitch Robinson is going to get. And then my thought went to, who would give them that? Oh no, it could be the Lakers. But I will maintain, I have been telling everybody, I'm not going to be, I've seen a lot of Lakers fans out there right now, a lot of Lakers fans right now that are doom and gloom, that are, why hasn't Rob done anything yet? Free agency hasn't even started yet. Can't sign and trade for a player right now because that's just admitting to tampering. Can't do that in this moment. So I'm going to stay optimistic, and I will be mad if we get to July 10th and the roster hasn't changed and everything is the same and the sky is falling a lot. I'll be mad then. Yeah. I'm not going to be pre-mad. I'm not going to be mad before things have completely gone awry or anything like that. Right now, I'm going to continue to be optimistic, and I'm going to say they find a way to get to Walker Kessler.
Let's go.
You guys have convinced me. We'll go in unison here and say Kessler. I would say if not Kessler, I didn't pick anyone from my tier, so I would pick Daniel Gafford. I think just like optically, I don't think you could sign a backup center and be like, here's our starter, Luca. Mm-hmm. Here's your A-list guy. Like at least Gafford, proof of concept, some history and rapport there. So I would say optimistically Kessler, maybe more grounded in reality, Daniel Gafford.
And I'll go Turner for that second spot.
All right. Brandon Mikkel said best option is as an over the cap team. Okay. So that's where you're trying to retain most of your own free agents, then make trades. Our free agents are better than the market's free agents. I'd target Misi, Rob Williams, center duo. We talked a little bit about that. And then we haven't talked a ton about the wings a little bit, but would you pick Eason or Herb Jones? Obviously the financials, but let's say Eason's contract is somewhere in the vicinity of Herb Jones' contract. Where would you guys go with that?
Well, you don't have to give up anything, right? Or actually, maybe you would if you offered for...
If you're going over the cap, yeah.
You have to sign and trade, yeah.
It's a sign and trade, yeah.
Which would hard cap...
If you get Herb, if you do Herb, you could potentially get Misi. You could do a Herb and Misi trade.
Mm-hmm. I'd do that.
Which...
Yeah.
Now, what one thing to note that I think continues to be overlooked, like with Marcus Smart, if you go over the cap, this is like one of my reasons I don't like the over the cap as much, is just Marcus Smart, you can offer him $6.2 million or part of the non-taxpayer MLE. So if you're right. using, I think Robert Williams is going to command 10 to 12 million somewhere in that range. Maybe that's a little high, but like I'd be shocked if it's under eight, but I think likely 10 to 12. That's basically your entire non-taxpayer MLE or, you know, 70% of it. That's not enough to retain Marcus. So I do think in this scenario, like, yes, you're getting the Eason or the Jones, which will step in and replace Marcus as that starter. I ideally would like to keep Marcus and make him that bench guy behind this higher level, younger defender. So that is just one consideration here. That is, if you do go over the cap, you have two options to keep Marcus. And I don't see Marcus signing for $6.2 million. I think his market's going to be higher than that.
Yeah. If given the choice between the two, I'd probably go Eason. If Misi's involved, I'd go the Pelicans deal. And I don't know if you guys heard, this doesn't apply as much to the over-the-cap scenario, but both Lowe and Stein made a comment about how the Clippers have been moving kind of like they're going to be under the cap. And that would require them renouncing Mathurin. If Mathurin hits unrestricted free agency, I think we should be all over that. I'm a big fan of his. But
teams would. Do you know how much teams? Everybody would hate the Lakers because you know what they would do all night long?
Foul. They'd
do even more free throws.
Yeah, let's make everybody madder online. Yes.
Question for you, Pete. Do you think he's good enough to play that wing defender role?
I think he's good on defense for the level of scorer that he is. If there's some skepticism about it and the premise of the question, I understand, but that dude can put the ball in the hoop and he cares on defense. And he's got a level of just steam and athleticism that I think, how much rim pressure is that between Luka and Austin and Mathurin? I just love that fit. I think we need a little bit more juice to be the best on ball team in the league, which I think we'd need to be to win a championship. But I understand the skepticism there, but I think he's two way talented enough to consider.
It's an interesting idea. I hadn't thought about that, about going after Mathurin. Yes, they would be, the three of them would be living at the line, but that would be, it's an interesting idea to go after Mathurin. All right, let's go here. I said I couldn't be more out on Robinson. Great rebounder, but a liability everywhere else. Minus 36 in the finals. If you want rebounding center, go get Andre Drummond, the big penguin. Go bring him back. I think one of my concerns, too, and this is why I have him as the floor, and you'd have to be adding wing help with it, is the Hakimich. I mean, the free throw shooting is a concern as well. Like, that makes it, again, we're talking about a closing five, that does make it difficult to have him out there when you know, like, hey, if you're in a late game situation, let's say you are, the opponent has got a free throw and you put in Mitch Robinson in order to rebound a potential missed free throw, the second he grabs that rebound, they're just going to foul him and you're basically losing that offensive possession. There's concerns here with Mitch. I'll certainly concede that.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I was thinking earlier, like, who's the best center the Lakers have acquired in the 2020s? And it might be Andre Drummond. It might be DeAndre Ayton, right? But it speaks to the point that we've been having this conversation for a very long time, going all the way back to AD. And so hearing Drummond brought up again, I do think
we'll consider Dwight as 2019.
Yeah.
Right? Because of
Dwight. Yeah.
Got it.
Marc Gasol?
Well, I have a soft spot for Marc Gasol. I'm a Marc Gasol truther, and the lineup data backed it up that was the best center combination with AD, but that's a conversation for a different day.
But is 37 or 38-year-old Marc Gasol the best freaking center?
I mean, no, it's bad. It's a train wreck. They have had, I mean, come we on. Could go Damian Jones, Thomas Bryant.
Oh, Damian Jones.
I mean, Jackson Hayes is kind of in this conversation, and that's, you know, it's bad. I'm also more out on Robinson. I think, especially I had him in that tier with Gafford and Williams. I think those guys are far more versatile and dynamic offensively and just useful offensively. I mean, offensive rebounding, of course, he's a monster. He's the best offensive rebounder in the league, tied with Steven Adams in offensive rebound rate. He's a big guy. I thought he had some good moments defensively against Wemby, especially some of those late game situations. That would be my pushback here on the Drummond thing. I don't think Drummond could guard Wemby anywhere close to the way that Robin, I think they're in night and day defensively in terms of their effectiveness. But yeah, I think even Robinson compared to Robert Williams, I think is a no brainer in terms of Robert Williams can space out to three on a low volume. I think he's got loaders to a degree that Robinson doesn't. Robinson is basically, you look at a shot profile, he's layup or dunk or bust. He doesn't even really have a hook shot game. He's not doing post moves or anything. So he, to me, Gafford or Williams, for me, are in the same tier, but I would much prefer either one of those guys.
100%. I'm right there. I would slot Rob Williams ahead of Mitch Robinson as well. But you know what? Big picture, thinking about what we were just saying there about the center position for the Lakers over the last, 5-6 years now. There's something just it feels wrong. It's antithetical to what the Lakers are. We think about their history. You go all the way back to George Mikan, the first superstar. But then you have Wilt, Kareem, Shaq, right? You go Pau Gasol, Anthony Davis, right? They've had these bigs, and being in this position where the Lakers are the team out there on the market looking for a big in a very difficult big man market, it just, there's something that just feels very un-Laker-like based on where this team's history has been.
Amen.
I see people saying Anthony Davis, we're talking acquired in the 2020s. Obviously, Anthony Davis is, I mean, he played some four during that time, but like AD, of course, is the guy, and he's the next great sure. Lakers big in that lineage. But we're talking 2020 specifically. So we would say starting 2020, 2021 season and beyond. Just want to make that clear in the chat.
Yeah.
All right. Let's. We're going to do a couple more here. 60% of the cap going to slow, unathletic, one-way players. Lakers building a good 80s team. And Genie and crew living in the past. So that's a reference to, obviously, to, you know, Austin and Luka. Being your two building block pieces. Is this something that when we look at the skill set of those two guys, as well as the deficiencies, is that something that can be overcome? Can a cohesive high level team be created with that as the foundation?
Yes, I understand the concern. I think Austin's like, I think he's got a job one step higher than he's, I don't want to say capable, but the championship, it's, you could be a very good team, a very cohesive team, competitive, but not be a championship team. That I kind of think that that's where we're at, in, like the starting point that we're at, that I think you'd have to really nail everything else to get there. And it's part of the reason why I think we need to just a little bit more juice offensively to kind of complete that. And I think, you know, having a high level front court guy is, you know, right at the top of the list of that.
This is why I look at the current group. And again, right now, guys like officially under contract, we'll put the player option guys to the side because we don't know what they're going to do. Like Luka, Austin, Vando, Adu, Jake, Carr, Bronny, DK. There is some athleticism there. Adu and Carr stand out. You know, Bronny, for his size, has pretty good, you know, just for being a guard, has pretty good athleticism. DK has some, like, there's some athleticism there, but there's not a lot of two-way ability. There's not a lot of shooting. And all these guys I view as, like, at best fringe rotation guys currently, and more so outside of like a playoff rotation. So I think the Lakers need to do if they operate under the cap is that I think they need to do an additional trade to get off of salary. That's a little tricky. If you are doing the sign and trade for Kessler or someone like that, and you're giving up picks, you might not have picks to dump a Vando. But I think if you're just trying to operate within the constraints of the 48 to 52 million, I don't know that's enough to do what you need. I think you need DA to opt out or be traded, and you need to dump Vando somewhere. And that to me is a more like appropriate way to kind of operate under the cap. Cause I think if they're just in that 48, 50 range, that money goes really quickly.
Yeah. You also have the option of stretching Vando for like $5.5 million.
Yeah, true. But that's not really how they've operated. But maybe with new ownership, it's a different perspective on that.
I think that may be the path. What Pete's talking about with stretching Vando might be the path to getting the most potential firepower in a trade, because then you're not burning draft capital just to get rid of Vando. Now, the question is, would that difference between the 12 and a half-ish million that Vando's getting right now and the five that he would sit on the books in dead money, is that seven-ish million dollars? Is that enough to do the things you're trying to do, or do you need the full 12? If you need the full 12, then you got to completely offload them. Otherwise, maybe the wave and stretch. And we look at the way the cap is going too. It's not ideal to have dead money on your books, but it's also wouldn't be the end of the world in terms of the direction the cap is going. You're not going to feel the pinch of $5 million sitting down in your books as much as, say, you know, the Suns or the Bucks feel with the Dame Lillard and the Brad Beal situation. So I think it's something that could be tolerable if they can find, again, you got to have the right deal to do it though. All right, guys, we do have some Super Chat questions left. I'm going to save those. I'm going to try to get on here over the weekend and combine the ones from the last couple of shows and do a big Q&A mailbag show. So we do appreciate everybody that submitted a Super Chat question. All of you here really enjoyed all the conversation going on in the chat, all the questions that have been asked. Appreciate all of you. Again, if you haven't done so yet, please make sure you hit the subscribe button. And guys, this was awesome. This was a lot of fun. I think we touched upon a lot of topics here and really laid out what the Lakers have in front of them now as we head into free agency starting up on June 30th. So, Jovan, Pete, guys, this is fantastic.
Had a blast. Thanks for having me, guys.
Great to have you on, Pete. And let's see. It's here. It's here. A few days away. We're going to start to get some murmurs of what's happening with the Lakers. We'll see if LeBron's contract, Rui, potential extension, like we're going to start to have a better sense of operating above or under the cap and then where they go from there.
I'm at the point, I know you guys are probably at the same spot where I'm jumping at every note. Every time my phone goes off, what happened? You know, I love this time of year.
There's crazy stuff. I mean, we had the LaMelo trade. Like there's just crazy stuff happening left and right in general.
For sure. For sure. All right, everybody. Again, appreciate all of you. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button. Till next time. See ya and stay safe.